21 of this podcast, and this time we'll be discussing an interesting topic on the rise of the neobanks and its significant benefits to our present digital economy. For today's podcast episode, we have invited Mr. Greg Krasnov, founder and chief executive officer of Tonic Bank, and currently at the forefront of financial inclusion developments in the Asia-Pacific region. Tonic Bank recently secured a digital bank license from the Philippine Central Bank, or BSP, making them the first digital-only neobank in the Philippines. So let's get started. Thank you for listening to FinCircle and welcome to our podcast. From the acceleration of technology, converged with the flood of digital traffic, the neobank was born. Neobanks are online financial institutions similar to traditional banks, but have the potential to offer better financial services to a larger audience. We have seen innovative David take on Goliath before. Look at what Amazon did to retail, or what Tesla's doing to the automotive industry. Now, the same shall happen to traditional banks as neobanks rise. What's the difference between traditional banks and neobanks? In terms of service platform, traditional banks have physical banking establishments, while neobanks basically have web and mobile services. In terms of market entry, traditional banks has been with us for more than 100 years, while neobanks have started 10 years ago. In terms of client relations, traditional banks have long-term, in-person, with minor changes, while neobanks have flexible, virtual, and easy to modify. In terms of customer support, Traditional banks have in-person, phone, and online, while neobanks have phone and online customer support. In terms of fees, the traditional banks have high fees and complex ones, while neobanks have low fees and very much transparent. In terms of banking license, traditional banks have an entire banking license as compared to neobanks, wherein they have either none, partial, or entire banking license. In terms of bank offices, traditional banks have more bank offices, while neobanks has none. In terms of confirmation process, traditional banks have long confirmation process as compared to an instant confirmation process by the neobanks. So the traditional model of banking relies on an expensive and outdated network of brick-and-mortar branches that just can't compete with software code. For example, in the past, if you wanted a loan, it will take months of paper tag between you and the loan officer. Now, someone can just submit their loan application online and get an immediate response from an algorithm that has access to their credit history. And this is only the beginning. According to a PwC report, the global neobank market is expected to hit $394.6 billion US dollars by 2026, from $18.6 billion US dollars in 2019. And financial technology companies are starting to take over as society goes cashless. The fintech industry has already started to swallow market share. In fact, a survey conducted by Finder.com in December 2020 revealed that out of 69.7%, which is equivalent to 177 million of the total US population that currently bank with traditional banks, and 8.8%, which is equivalent to 22.5 million of Americans, intend to open a digital-only bank account in the coming months. Our ancestral cousins across the Atlantic have already started to pivot heavily towards digital banking. Market research from Propeller Insights showed that 77% of consumers are planning to switch to a neobank, with only 21% considering even visiting a bank in person. And the movement from in-person to digital is inevitable. That's why it's also being considered that there's a financial prosperity for all. Far too long, traditional incumbent banks have been biased and unfair towards minorities. Even with a recent spike in businesses owned by POC, or what we call people of color, this past decade, the average white family earns 10 times more than the average black family. This makes it harder for a POC-owned business, on average, to pull out a loan due to less credit. And those trapped in a never-ending cycle of discrimination are being pushed further and further down the economic ladder. And this is where neobanks can do what the traditional banks will not. Neobanks can attract the unbanked and underbanked communities that have a purchasing power of $1.2 trillion US dollars. With their inclusive repository of digital financial services, they can offer accounts that act as a demand deposit and complete with a debit card and with opportunities to build and or repair bad credit. The small business owners, as well as entrepreneurs and freelancers that have not been a good fit for commercial banks, can now have more support in managing accounts, expense monitoring, and employee benefits. Not only are these digital banks more inclusive, but they offer a more personalized customer experience that bodes well with the younger generations. By going fully virtual, neobanks have a near limitless range with a high ceiling of opportunity for better and trendier customer services. The dominant younger generations of consumers, which is what we call millennials and Gen Z, has already started to adopt new and improved virtual banks. The younger generations enjoys what's hip and easy to use, so it's no surprise why they would shift towards banks with seamless financing and more tailored to fit their style. Also, this is a generation that's nearly buried in debt. And right now, the average outstanding student loan debt is an estimated $32,731. And the outstanding weight of debt created from prior generations rests on the shoulders of millennials and Generation Z. They need platforms that can offer features to help manage debt, as well as P2P or person-to-person payments, gamification of financial literacy, and increased savings while starting investing. All of this can be offered with neobanks. So, what do we see based on these facts and developments? As of now, the offerings of a neobanks are limited as compared to the traditional banks. But as more developers and entrepreneurs get creative, the shifts will definitely escalate. Currently, 57% of the world population has internet access, and 51% are mobile users. Now the question is this: what is going to happen when the rest go online? Do you think they will be heading to the nearest in-person bank or dive into the virtual banking arena from the comfort of their homes? Well, I believe we already know the answer to this question. In today's podcast episode, we'll be talking to Mr. Greg Krasnov, founder and CEO of Tonic Bank, and will share with us his insights on financial inclusion and his digital initiatives in the Asia-Pacific region. It's a great honor to have you, Greg, and welcome to FinCircle.
Hi, Edgar. Thank you very much for having me on.
Let's probably start by laying out the value proposition of Tonic Bank to our present digital economy.
Well, our bank is focused on the population that constitutes the Philippines' growing middle class. And within the demographic, there are really kind of two distinct parts of the population that we're focusing on. The upper part of the middle class is the demographic with bank deposits. And most of these people are already banked and they're deeply dissatisfied with the existing digital experience that they have from the current banks, and in particular with both products and interest rates. You know, Filipino banks offer very, very low interest rates, and the digital channel doesn't really offer any ways to help the Filipinos save. It's just like very, very standard saving and term deposit product range. So within that demographic, we're helping people save. You know, we have some innovative products like Stash, Group Stash, where people can save for a specific goal or save together. The idea is to take, you know, things like Paluwagan and online and, you know, make it accessible to people in a digital environment. That's really, you know, the what we're seeing on that is a huge demand from the population for that kind of product. We launched about 4 months ago, and in this 4 months, I'm happy to report that we've crossed 3 billion pesos of deposits already. So we're going very fast, much faster than anybody's ever gone in the Philippines in terms of deposits inflow. That's very, very good for us and for our customers. On the asset side of the proposition, our value is more towards the lower part of the middle class, which is the lending products that we're about to start offering. Currently, the banks are only focused on the top 5% of the population when it comes to lending. And for most people, especially when they don't have a bank account or credit history, it's impossible for them to take a loan from the banks. So they have to borrow from friends and family or from 5/6s. And this is the market that we're going into with our lending. So we will offer things at a somewhat higher interest rate than the banks, of course, but at the same time, a much, much, much cheaper and less reputationally intense proposition than what people currently have, taking money from friends and family, as I said, or from the 5/6s. It's a massive market. You know, Philippines is one of the lowest in terms of unsecured consumer lending as percentage of GDP of anywhere in emerging Asia. So we think the market potential is anywhere between 50 and 100 billion US dollars in terms of asset class, and looking forward to helping unbanked and underbanked Filipinos access credit.
Tonic Bank becomes Philippines' first neobank that secures a digital bank license, Greg. And there are 51.2 million Filipinos remain unbanked, according to the 2019 Financial Inclusion Survey by the Philippine Central Bank, or BSP. How do you think Tonic Bank can bridge the gaps?
Well, Edgar, as I said, you know, with our lending product, we're going into that addressable that is mainly unbanked right now. You know, as part of the package, they're going to be getting a Tonic account, because, you know, before they can apply for a loan, they have to onboard into the app. It takes them 5 minutes, but as part of that onboarding, they actually get a current account with a debit card, then they can apply for the loan. And we will use their smartphone information and their demographic information to assess their creditworthiness. And we're working with some really world-class vendors on that to help us best way use that data. Then we don't need the customer to have a credit history. So by doing that, we're hoping to unlock this massive potential of consumer lending for the Philippines, for the mass market. That's really the main kind of value proposition to that addressable from our side. But of course, as I said, it also will have an account with a debit card. So for many of these borrowers, it will be their first bank account. And I'm sure that many of them will find some useful things to do with that as well.
What differentiates Tonic Bank as compared to its adversaries?
I don't think we have any adversaries right now. You know, I don't really consider the digital channel proposition from the incumbent banks as direct competition for us. So on the deposit side, nobody's offering the types of products and the types of interest rates that we are. On the lending side, nobody's really doing the products that we're about to start doing. You know, the cash loan purely through the digital app, but with, you know, 24 months term, is really not available in the market right now to the unbanked population. So, it's kind of hard for me to answer that question because for the time being, we don't think we have competition. Of course, competition will come over time. There are more neobank licenses being issued. As these competitors launch their propositions, some of them might become competing with us in some of these product categories. But I think, the actual operational launch for any of these guys is still quite far away.
The Philippine Central Bank, or BSP, recently issued a regulatory guidelines regarding financial data sharing, Greg. How do you think Tonic Bank can contribute to this open finance framework that promotes interoperability and collaborations amongst the various stakeholders within the financial ecosystem?
Yeah, the open banking framework is very, very exciting thing for the Filipino market and for the Filipino consumers. I think it's basically what will happen is a banking customer will be able to say to anybody, to me or to any other kind of a digital channel player, hey, here's my logins, go access my data. And go pull my data, and that'll be great because then it enables all sorts of wonderful applications. Like, one of the things that was an insight for us when we were researching the Filipino consumer mentality when it comes to saving was that Filipinos universally say, we don't need another saving account, we need help saving. So that was a great insight for us, right? And we kind of understand where it's coming from. It's people in the Philippines generally tend to act on impulse a lot with regard to their financial goals. And so anything that helps them set the goals more clearly, manage these goals more clearly, I think will be a great hit with the population. There are things like personal financial management applications that exist in more developed markets and that we will be rolling out over time as well. But these don't work unless you can enable a 360 view of all your spending, right? And if you have multiple bank accounts, which a lot of the banked Filipinos already have multiple bank accounts, right? So they're using this bank for this, that bank for that, and then it's very hard for them to know, okay, how much money am I spending on what in total? Right. So this is really exciting. Another wonderful application, I think, will be the use of the bank statement API for consumer credit. Right now, all consumer lenders are like asking the customer to upload their payslip, to upload their BIR, to upload their, bank statement. And if you can tell the customer, okay, just click here and you enable me access to pull your statement from BDO for the last 3 months. And then you can pull that statement, then you don't need to OCR it, optical character recognition. You actually pull in a very structured way that is analyzable. And then you can crunch that through the data algorithms. And it can really help a lot to help a lender come with a credit decision. So I think, open banking is a very, very exciting thing for the Philippines. We've been talking to the open banking providers in the Philippines, and we've already integrated some of the solutions. So, for example, we have integrated BPI and Union Bank account pools into our app. So the customer can actually pull the money directly from his accounts at those two banks directly into our app. There will be more things like that that we're really looking forward to integrating and making it a better experience for our customers.
The unsecured lending business in the Philippines is estimated to be at $10 billion, Greg. How do you think Tonic Bank will be able to cover this particular opportunity to have more inclusive economic growth?
Yeah, $10 billion is where it is today. Where it should be is between $50 and $100 billion. And that gap, that enormous gap, in the tens of billions of dollars, it's caused by the fact that the banks are not lending to the mass market. They're lending to the top 5%. So for a bank, if you want to go and take a loan from a bank, first thing the bank is going to do is pull your credit history. Guess what? Only less than 5% of the Filipinos have a credit history. And if you don't have a credit history, it's called an auto reject. They send you a very nice letter saying, thank you very much, you're not good enough for us. That's you know, when you don't have population with access to consumer credit, you also can stimulate the consumer economy. And you know, for the middle class, it's critical you know, to be able to access their earnings in a forward fashion. Effectively, what you're doing is you're pledging your excess earnings to get something good today. And that can really help stimulate the economy. So to give you an example, consumer durables market in the Philippines is about $8 billion per year. So we're talking about, you know, fridges, washing machines, furniture, that kind of stuff. Now, within that market, the penetration of consumer lending is currently below 15%, 1.5, right? The 85% of the business is done on cash. Where people cannot like take a loan. It's only a very small percentage of population that can access a loan. Now, in most emerging markets of similar level of development as Philippines, you would have what's, you know, called sales finance product, you know, point of sale lending, achieving between 40 and 50% of gross merchandise value. So once, you know, people come into that channel and, you know, more actively lend to the population, then that will cause a big expansion because the people who haven't been able to afford on cash, all of a sudden, they will be able to take out a loan to buy a TV, take out a loan to buy a fridge or a new washing machine, or, you know, improve their furniture or make an apartment renovation. And that can really help drive the consumer economy. It can help drive the construction sector. And, you know, a lot of good things will happen when that credit starts flowing.
What do you think are the challenges of neobanks at this point in time?
In the Philippines or in general?
I could say both.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in the Philippines, I think the biggest challenge for a neobank is how to manage credit risk. You know, because I don't consider payments as the proper monetization path for an emerging market neobank. You know, payments are great, and of course, there's a lot of demand for it. But at the end of the day, these are small tickets with very small fees, and like getting any meaningful revenue on that stream is hard. So guys like GCash or PayMaya or some other wallets, you know, it's really hard for them to make money because they spend a lot of money on customer acquisition, but then the revenue they get is quite small per customer. So from my point of view, where the money really is in the lending. Because that's a huge opportunity and a huge revenue pool. But to access that profitably, you need to solve the credit risk issue. So you need to be able to lend to the customers who are going to pay you back. And you need to create quantitative models to assess the customers based on new sources of data, not just the credit bureau. Because most of them will not have credit bureau. So this is, I think, the biggest challenge for a neobank in the Philippines, and this is a challenge that we're solving right now as well. You know, clearly, with our traction on the deposits, we've demonstrated that the customer in the Philippines wants to give their deposits to a neobank, and we can basically get access to almost unlimited liabilities. But we need to be able to put those liabilities into a profitable portfolio.
The online dwellers and digital savvy bank clients are exponentially increasing, particularly during the pandemic situation. However, there are still a considerable number of our bank customers, like the individuals above 60 years old, for instance, that are used to face-to-face engagement as well as brick-and-mortar banking transactions. How do you think we can further influence customers to fully embrace mass adoption towards a gratifying digital banking experience?
Yeah, thank you, Edgar. That's actually being much less of a challenge for two reasons. You know, reason number one is it's there's this great quote from Bill Gates who said like a long time ago, you know, everybody needs banking, nobody needs banks. You know, so like you don't actually like anybody doesn't like people don't wake up in the morning and go, oh man, wouldn't it be like so cool to go to a bank branch today and just like hang out there for 3 hours and sign papers? You know, it's not a fun thing to do. It's a painful thing to do. It's a waste of freaking time. And people hate it. You know, for the majority of people, they really, really don't enjoy that experience. And it represents a pain point for the customer. Even the older generation, you know, it's still Like there is some element of trust because they know their teller, and but like there's less and less of that. And COVID in the last year and a half has actually created this massive transition towards anything digital, including in the less digitally native parts of the population. So the digital payments in the Philippines have been increasing exponentially over the last 18 months, and it's a universal trend anywhere in the emerging markets. It's same thing is happening, in the developed markets. Same thing is happening in not only banking but in other parts of the economy. E-commerce, for example, it's going through the roof. If we look at the e-commerce in the Philippines, last year e-commerce growth in the consumer durables categories was like 42, I think, or 45% year on year. So huge increase. I mean, we're talking billions and billions of volume shifting from, the physical store to online sales. And of course, that's expanding, the infrastructure. And as the infrastructure expands for e-commerce, it becomes cheaper and cheaper for the customers to get those goods. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. So I think all of these behaviors that are happening now during COVID, they're causing a fundamental change in how the customers want to get their service in the future. And I don't think there's like once you learn how to order food to the house, it's hard to go back to going out and being in a crowded restaurant and like having to wait for a table. And it's just like once people learn how to do that, then the impact of like going back is just not going to be the same.
The Tonic Bank digital architecture are very impressive, Greg. Relatively, you have chosen technology leaders like Finastra and Amazon Web Services to make this digital banking initiative a reality. What should be our realistic expectation for the digital bank of the future?
You mean in terms of technology?
In terms of technology and the new way of banking, for instance, Greg.
Yeah, I think I would go back to what I told you, the quote from Bill Gates, right? Everybody says, everybody needs banking and the services that banking represents. Everybody needs payments, everybody needs loans, everybody needs to make an interest on the money, access money that they have. But nobody actually needs that to be delivered by banks as they exist right now. So there's a huge movement in the world towards this concept of embedded finance. One of the big trends, for example, is this buy now, pay later. So you're getting your credit instead of a credit card or instead of applying for a loan, you're getting finance right there at the point of sale, instant approval. And it's all completely seamless. And that's just one example, right? So I think in the future, you're just gonna, talk to your Alexa or talk to your Siri and go, hey, Siri, how can I get, a loan for $1,000 where, I pay back $100 a month? And then go fetch, and Alexa and Siri will go fetch and come back and say, hello, sir. I found five opportunities for you to avail of these types of loans. Would you like me to apply for them? And then you go, yeah, please go and apply. And like Siri will apply on your behalf and she will arrange the whole thing. And ultimately, you're not even going to know, like, there's not going to be like a form to fill out or anything like this. So I think this is where this whole thing is moving. It's going to be embedded finance. You need to be in with your technology and very flexible with the technology to integrate into a very broad range of channels and modes of communication with the ultimate consumer. And the consumer ultimately is not going to even like know or care who he took the loan from, who he keeps this deposit with. Like he's just going to go, well, I don't know, like, Siri figured it out, and like whether it's Tonic or whether it's BDO or whoever, that's just not going to matter to the consumer because like the brand loyalty to banks is generally not that great. It's not about the brand, it's about a whole bunch of other things for the consumer. So yeah, I think like we're talking about probably 10 to 15 year perspective, but this is where this whole thing is gonna head. And people who are continuing to put money on branches I'm going to be in trouble because there's going to be less and less people who want to go to the branch.
Given your wealth of experience on financial inclusion initiatives, any word of advice that you can give with regards to this subject matter?
Well, if there is a word to advise to you know, the entrepreneurs out there, like there's a very big movement now towards fintech and a lot of investment going into fintech. And you know, if you're an entrepreneur looking for opportunities, you know, definitely consider fintech because you know, it's where a lot of value will be created in the next decade. And it's the largest, basically largest industry in the world. There's tons and tons of opportunity for taking the cost out, for taking the pain out for the customer, and building sustainable, big, interesting, exciting businesses that fulfill the needs of all the stakeholders, you know, the customers, the shareholders, the employees, the society at large.
Are there any initiatives that you're working with, Greg, that you would like to share with our podcast listening audience? And what are the easiest way of reaching out or contacting you?
Right now, our big proof point of getting deposits in has been achieved. So, you know, we've done, you know, I like to say, and, you know, when people come to work for Tonic, I like to say, okay, guys, you're joining a legend. We're building a legend. Yeah, we're doing something that hasn't been done before. You know, the whole Star Trek thing, right? You know, go where no man has gone before, right? So that's kind of what we're doing. And I'm very glad to see, okay, with deposits, we have achieved that, right? The traction that we had in the first 4 months of our launch, we're at, you know, over 3 billion pesos of deposits. And that has never been achieved by any bank newly launched in the Philippines. So our next step is putting that to work into profitable loan portfolio. We should be launching our first loans to the public within the next month to month and a half. We're already piloting our first consumer loans. And by the end of this year, we are planning to have a few different lending products out in the market. So that's really our biggest challenge right now, is bringing that product to the market, making sure that what we're offering is revolutionary enough and meets the needs of all those unbanked consumers that are borrowing from, you know, friends and family and 5/6s.
Thanks so much, Greg, for sharing us your valuable insights on neobanks and the corresponding benefits of a digital banking services. We wish you all the best and more successful digital initiatives in the future.
Thank you very much, Edgar. Thanks, appreciate your time.
Sharing us his insights on neobanks and the financial inclusion developments in the Asia Pacific region. We would like to hear from you. Share us your thoughts regarding our topics and send us a message on the Anchor Voice message box. Your message could end up on our future podcast episode. Make sure you never miss any episodes of FinCircle by clicking the subscribe button or follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Amazon Podcasts, Pocket Cast, Audible, Overcast, and Anchor.fm. You can also reach us on our website at fincircle.wordpress.com and our Facebook page at FinCircle Podcast. This concludes our podcast episode today. Thank you for listening on FinCircle. This is Ed Angeles. Let's catch up again soon.